You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome into the Locked On Pacers podcast. My name is Adam Friedman. As always, I'm a staff writer at IndyCornrows.com and one of the co-hosts of the Locked On Pacers podcast. On today's episode, it's going to be all solo, all me for this Monday edition. I'm going to break down the Cavaliers and Clippers wins by the Pacers and go behind some of the stats that have propelled the Pacers to five straight wins. Tony and I will be back on Tuesday with our weekly show. We just delayed the day because it's a shorter week because the All-Star break starts on Wednesday. We just kind of wanted to push our weekly show a little bit farther back just so we could get more information and stuff like that and just have it close to the All-Star break because we're probably going to do a shorter week of podcasts this week considering there are not a ton of Pacers, as in zero, playing in the All-Star game. And there's a ton of game action to talk about, you know, barring something developing after Wednesday. It might be a shorter podcast week from us, unfortunately, for you guys out there. But we promise as soon as the Pacers get back to going, we will get back to our 5 day a week thing. I do imagine we will do a mailbag probably after the All-Star break we did last year. So look for Tony to announce it on Twitter Tuesday, Wednesday, maybe even later in the week to collect questions. We'll probably do maybe a two-part, three-part show the following week on just some of the questions you guys got. I mean, I think there's a lot of interesting stuff to talk about now, and you might have questions on considering Victor Oladipo's hurt, but this team is in a good position still to make a playoff run possibly, and so that's what I'm kind of going to talk about coming up. So let's get right to it. The first point I want to hit before we get into even kind of break down any of the games is the Pacers are in a unique position where they are right now in the standings, where they have a legit shot at a three seed, which I think still means, you know, I still on this point, if you're a top three seed in the East, it guarantees you a spot in the second round of the playoffs because the sixth seed is Brooklyn, Charlotte, Miami are the 6-8, then you got Detroit at the 9. Those are, you're going to play one of those teams, which you should be able to beat. Even a depleted Pacers team that they are right now without Oladipo should be able to beat one of those teams. And so the Pacers sit a game and a half above Philadelphia, as I record this podcast on a Sunday, and sit two games above the Celtics. Philadelphia does play today at 2:30. I'm recording this about 10:30 a.m. At 3:30 Eastern. I'm on Central Time down here in Tennessee. But so that could change, obviously. But essentially, they have the ability to remain the three seed because they've recovered. I mean, those four straight losses were bad, and it looked like we were heading towards, you know, the Pacers as a five seed, first round, five game exit probably. But now, the way they're playing, they seem like they can beat still the bad team. So, you know, I went through their schedule and I just marked down some win losses real fast. So they have 26 games left, 13 home, 13 road, easy split. That's nice. I mean, they're a much better home team this year. They're 21-7 at home and 16-12 on the road. But if you look at the schedule, they probably have a guaranteed, I think, 12 losses. So if you do the math, two against Milwaukee, Philly, two against Oklahoma City, two against Denver, Portland, Golden State, and two against Boston. It's 11 losses total. So it puts them at 37-30 right now. Then you have probably 10 guaranteed wins, I think. So it's New Orleans, three against Detroit, Dallas, two against Orlando, Chicago, New York, Atlanta. Now, they could lose some of those games. That's definitely possible, but they should win. Those are maybe should-win games is the right way to put that. So that puts them at now at 47-30. At least like five toss-up games, Brooklyn, Clippers, Minnesota, Charlotte, Washington. Clippers might not be a toss-up anymore considering they traded away half their team. Washington, they should be, but also they lost them already by about 40 points, it felt like. I think it was a 20-30-point game, so that's a toss-up. I maybe should have put Orlando in there too because they did lose to Orlando, but I feel like that was still when they were figuring it out, and now they've kind of settled in, and they should be able to beat Orlando. Orlando's not a very good basketball team this season. And then Charlotte is probably a win, should be a win. Minnesota, I think, should be a loss, and then Brooklyn 50-50 on. So let's say they can win 60% of their toss-up games and all their should wins. They would put them at about 52 wins, which is right on the pace that Boston and Philly are at for win-wise, which the three seed, again, is always the goal. That is the goal because the three seed guarantees probably a first-round playoff win, which for a Pacers team without Oladipo to win a playoff series would be huge for the young guys. First of all, you get to see Aaron Holiday play 18, 20 minutes for at least eight playoff games, which is being credible for his growth. And Edmonton the same way. Second of all, it might give this team a better shot at a mid-tier free agent they got offered this summer because they can look at the Pacers and say, wow, this team, even without their best player, still fought their way in the playoffs. I want to go to that team because you had me at Oladipo. Boom, we're a conference final contender. I mean, kind of like the way Boston had sort of pushed themselves into a conversation as a free agent destination the past few years and had gotten Kyrie to want to go there at least to re-sign. I mean, I guess he might not re-sign right now, but he was wanted to be traded there because they had gone to the conference finals with a team of nobodies. I mean, it was Isaiah Thomas, who was great that year, and a bunch of, you know, Isaiah Thomas, Horford, and a bunch of guys who, you know, might be something, you know, Jaylen Brown could be something someday, depending on what, you know, how he develops. And you got Morris, you got a bunch of guys, but a bunch of guys who are role players in a sense. And so that's the conversation that we need to get into, is that can we be in the second round of the playoffs? And then you're also playing spoiler. I mean, you're ruining probably one of Philly or Boston seasons, which will ruin their free agent prospects this summer possibly, and that would just be fun to see, to be honest. But going beyond that, the Pacers, the reason they're in this position right now is because of, I would say, I mean, it really has to go with the starting five, or really four of the starting five. I'm not sure I put Evans in there, but I put Collison, Turner, Bojan, and Thad, who have all kind of elevated their games in the last nine games. They've sort of taken this next level of becoming, I guess, kind of showing their true colors as like leaders, and why the Pacers valued some of this veteran leadership and Turner's kind of growth combined with that. So, I mean, you can start with the two vets, Collison and Thad, and you can just see they've sort of took in the mantle of like, we're not going to let this ship sink. We're not going to let this team collapse and fall down and into despair. We're going to, you know, we might not beat the best teams, but this team is going to not lose the games they shouldn't lose. And you could see Thad and Collison doing that. I mean, over the last nine, looking at Collison, who's shooting 53% from the field and 52% from three. I mean, he's almost at 50-50-90 over his last nine games. I mean, he has really kind of taken this mantle as like the veteran, you know, heart of the team in a sense. It might be the right way to put it. And then you look at Thad kind of the same way. He's shooting 50-43-83. His free throw percentage was in the tank. I mean, those first 20, 30 games, it was like 20-something percent, I think. And his three-point percentage was definitely below 30% until the most recent run he's had since December. But both those guys have sort of stepped into this role and just said, we're going to try hard every night. We're going to put in a ton of effort, and we're going to try to win. And you have to respect them and commend them for that. One, because both guys are on expiring contracts and probably heading into what would be probably their last major contract, right? So, you know, they're playing 29 and 20 and 30 minutes a game roughly each. And that's not terrible. But for guys over the age of 30, there's, you know, as you start to keep playing 30 minutes a game, you shorten the lifespan of your career. Now, fortunately for Thad, he hasn't really had a major injury besides that wrist thing a few years ago. Collison had a knee injury, so he's had some significant issues that could linger later in his career. But these guys going at the level they're playing at, it might be sacrificing long-term six, like longevity in their career for this short-term success, and you have to commend them for that because it shows they're true professionals. And ultimately, I think both will be rewarded in the offseason, maybe not by the Pacers, but I think you'll see both those guys get, I'm not talking like mega contracts, but maybe 2 or 3 year deals of guaranteed money for in the multi, you know, in the 8-figure range. I'm thinking 10 to 11, maybe both guys get 2 years, 20, maybe a third year option, something like that for the team. Because, you know, I think Kevin Pritchard was right to kind of bet on some veterans. I mean, this is why you bring in guys who maybe aren't the top tier free agents, but are guys who you know are good and can be quality players. Maybe you overpay him a little bit even too. You know, and this is why when you're going, you know, you bet on these kind of guys because, you know, you could easily go in the tank. I mean, they could have easily traded Thad, Collison, Tyree, Kojo, all those guys and just said, screw it, we're going to go into the tank. But you don't do that because there is kind of this weird loophole in the league. Might be the right word to say it. Loophole might not be the right word, but there's this weird kind of way where you can collect enough veteran guys to win enough games to be successful, which can help your younger guys versus just going into the tank because it's kind of like teams no longer value those mid-tier veterans. They're sort of like a team either wants to be really young and rebuilding or have their superstars. And then you kind of got all these teams that, you know, don't want to be in this no man's land. But for the Pacers, being where they are right now is not necessarily a bad thing because they can point to it as a success for this offseason when they're recruiting other guys to come in. And that's the key, right? The whole key of this season now is to develop young guys, but to point to, hey, we've had success, we've got a good coach, we've got a coach who, even when he loses his best player, can figure it out and can piece the guys together and can win games. And you have to commend McMillan the way they're playing recently. I mean, he seems to have figured it out a little bit. You know, they've been beneficiaries also of a ton of luck, but, you know, that's part of the NBA season. You know, nobody's going to remember at the end of the year that, yeah, okay, they played a Lakers team who gave up because half their team was on the trade block that day. A Clippers team who traded half their team. Like, nobody's going to remember those things. They're going to look back at the end of the year and say, wow, this team won 50 games and Oladipo missed 40-something of them. And that's going to be, you know, that's all that's going to be remembered. And it's going to be like, this team is really well coached and well, you know, they understand how to organize, how to put a team together, and they have depth and all these other things that, you know, maybe aren't valuable in building a big three super team, but can help you get that one guy, that one other guy, can help you when you make a trade, if it's a guy to stay long-term, because you say, look, we're a stable organization, we're not going in the tank, we will never go in the tank, we're going to try to win, we're always going to try to be successful. And I think they had to kind of get that stench off them of, like, this is a kind of a crap organization after the Paul George situation, because I think Paul George kind of exposed this team as a team that was not very well, you know, chemistry-wise, things weren't well, there was a disconnect between the top of the organization and the players. I mean, you could see that between, I think, Larry Bird and the rest of the guys, because he cut Hibbert and he tried to rebuild this team on the fly into something that was completely different and all that stuff. And so they might have rebuilt that trust with players, at least, of just like, we have an organization that knows what they're doing and we're never going to just give up on you guys. And that's a huge, valuable asset. The other two guys to talk about, obviously, I mean, this is just obvious stuff, is Bojan and Miles Turner. Turner, I think, has finally found his place. I think he's finally found, I mean, like, I've, you know, for the past 3 months, he's really kind of found his place, but I feel like at this point, it feels like he finally has found, this is what I am. I mean, if you look at his stats, so the last 33 games since he returned from injury against San Antonio, after San Antonio game, it's 15 points per game on 53, 47, 68 shooting, almost three blocks per game, and almost 8 rebounds per game. And this is the kind of guy who I think has figured out, I'm a defensive master. I mean, I'm the best defensive player on the court, I think is what he could say. You know, I can block anybody's shot. I can get rebounds. I can guard and other guys. I can switch on and hold my own because I can use my length and my size to kind of bully them at times. I mean, he's like, I'm a superb defensive player. And then I just have to figure out offensively the pieces, the times I want to take my shots. And he's sort of figured that out, you know, where to take his threes, when to feel like he's in rhythm, when to not force shots, when to, you know, go in the lane, when to try to post things up. I mean, he's gotten more opportunities, and that's huge. I mean, now he's up to 11.6 shots per game. In the 9 games Vic was out, he's now shooting up to 11. I mean, this is an increase from the previous year, which is huge. Because you notice as he takes more shots, he puts up more points per game, and he still remains efficient. Like, his efficiency goes up too. So, like, you know, his 16-17 was his best year of his career so far. He was taking 10-point shots, shooting 51-35. Well, now he's taking, over the last 9 games, 11.6 shots, but he's shooting 55-42-76, which puts him at 16.4 points per game. I mean, he's just, I think he's figured it out, and he's really kind of impressed me as, like, Turner's a guy who can succeed even without the ball, and he's not somebody saying, I need the ball, which is kind of the perfect third star on a team. You know, I think Oladipo, somebody, and then Turner is a great big three and a great thing to build around. I wrote this at Corners last week. Just, that is a big three. I mean, you really got it. I mean, Turner is probably vaulting himself into a top 40 player at this point. I mean, he should be a borderline all-star, honestly, the way he's playing recently. But he's vaulting himself up as, because he's maybe the second best defensive center in the league behind Gobert. So he's putting himself there, combined with that he is, you know, he's an efficient offensive player who maybe he doesn't shoot like 70% the way Gobert does or even Capella does, but he can stretch the floor and he can stay on the court defensively, and that's a huge thing. And, you know, when teams go small, he can still play out there because he can guard on the perimeter, and that's kind of his benefit, and that is what kind of pushes him. And, you know, he's a versatile center, which a lot of those bigger guys aren't. I mean, even like an Embiid who can shoot threes can be exposed out on the perimeter by guards, where Turner has become this point where he no longer gets exposed by guards. I mean, he can't get beaten. He'll get beaten. That happens. But he's not like, oh my God, he got switched on to, I'm trying to think of a guard they played recently that's been any good. I mean, Lou Williams, for example, I don't think he ended up guarding him. But if say that and he wasn't like, oh crap, we're screwed. It was like, okay, Turner can hold himself probably. He can let Lou get by him and block his shot into the stands. I mean, that kind of stuff. And so I think he's slowly inching his way up, you know. I mean, Bill Simmons' trade value column was in a great indication of where a player is, but he put him at like 45, I think. I think Turner's just slowly inching his way up, and he just feels comfortable, you know, where he is. He is almost kind of becoming kind of a leader, I guess the right way to put it. I mean, he is taking kind of this mantle as Indiana's guy, and he's kind of willing to be, you know, he just he feels like it feels like a maturity there for him, and he just turned a corner, and this feels like this is his year. He's got the contract now, and now he's going to probably be on a you know, this is the contract the team paid for. They paid him 4 years, 72, and probably at the free agent this year, he might have got 4 years, 100. Like they're underpaying him essentially now. I feel like they're paying him the right value or undervalued, so he can use that extra cap space to go after guys and stuff like that. So I just like the way he's been. And then Bojan on the other side of this whole thing has just exploded because they've made him the focal point of the offense. He's not just becoming kind of the three-point specialist, but he's cutting a lot. He's getting a lot of, you know, he's almost catching teams off guard or by surprise. You know, that was his biggest thing, I think, or his last five games, is he's just been kind of like, teams know he's good, but they don't really expect him, and he just, you know, he's able to sneak by a guy and get a easy pass under the rim for a layup. He's able to blow by a guy. Like, he's really been able to take the mantle as an offensive focal point. And I think the thing with Bojan that worries me the most, honestly, is that what we're seeing now, when he goes back to his old role, he'll be fine, and I think he'll accept it. But, like, the way, maybe he's meant to be the focal point of an offense on a bad team. I mean, you know, I don't think Bojan is your focal point, can ever win you a championship. But maybe he's meant to be, and the focal point on a bench unit. Maybe he should be playing more, you know. Like, it's clear when he's the focal point of the offense, he's been pretty good. I mean, you know, he's never going to be Victor Oladipo efficient or, you know, that kind of crazy good. But he's good. I mean, he's a good focal point of an offense. If you're running, you know, 10, 12 shots a game through him, at least. I mean, if you're getting him 10 to 12 specific shots per game, that's pretty good. Your offense is going to be pretty good. You can see the Pacers have succeeded really the past five games because of his kind of explosion. And I guess I'm just wondering, the other part of this is if he's boosted his value so much that he almost is going to be worth too much money to resign this summer. So is he pushed himself into a $15 million a year number, which I think is a little bit overpaying for a guy like Bojan? Fortunately, I think he turns 30 this offseason. So there's that part of it, where I don't think anybody is going to give a 30-year-old guard more than like 2 years at 15 a year. So he's not like he's going to have some cap-killing contract. So he turns 30 April 18th. So I don't know. I mean, the way he's playing, let's see if he can keep it up. There was more than somebody joke on Twitter that when we thought Bojan was streaky. You know, he can still be streaky, I'm sure. But, yeah, let's see. If he keeps playing the way he's playing, the Pacers should easily push themselves into a chance at the 3 seed. They'll probably, they're going to be 3 through 5. I mean, it's pretty obvious. I think right now, I think the last 5 games have basically clinched a playoff spot for them. I mean, look at it. Detroit is 25-20 now, which means they're on pace to win 38 games, 37 games. That's right where the Pacers are. So the Pacers are going to be a playoff team now. If they can get to 50 with Vic playing just like 30-something games, that's incredible. And it's going to be on the parts of the backs of Bojan and Miles, who have both really just stepped up. And it's interesting to see because I thought Tarik Evans would be the guy that they kind of like start to lean on and stuff like that, but he just hasn't been good, and they just kind of have, he's almost just out there to go through the motions in a sense. I mean, he's not been, I wouldn't say he's been like hot garbage, but he's shooting 35-30, so that's not great. But it seems like McMillan, which I never saw coming, really figured out, okay, we're going to win games, we're going to build through Bojan and Turner, and then DC and Thad are going to kind of fill in the gaps, and then we're going to let our bench guys play, and if they play well, they play well. No, they haven't played that great. We'll see what happens, but I never really thought that's what they would do. I never thought they would build an offense through Bojan, but what do I know? They made a great move, and that's why I still think McMillan deserves huge credit. This team wins 50 games. I don't know how McMillan is not Coach of the Year, to be honest. I don't know how you take a team without your best player for – I got to figure out how many games playing. I've said it like 4 different times, how many games he's missed. Let me look at how many games Oladipo's actually played this season so I can figure out how many he's going to end up missing. So Oladipo has played 36 games. So Oladipo will end up missing, 46 games. So McMillan will have won 50 games, if he can do it, with his best player only playing 36 of them. And I think I don't know what the record with Oladipo was, but I'm assuming it was, they probably lost, 10 times, give or take? I mean, let's see. I can do it real fast with Oladipo. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. So 23-13 Oladipo. Right, because I guess they're, I think, what did somebody say? Are they 8-4? No, they're 12-8 without him, so that would make sense. So yeah, they're 12-8 without him, so that means he lost 9 games. But yeah, so I don't know. I mean, I've been impressed with the way this team has played. I hope this isn't just some kind of fluke moment. I mean, they've got a really tough month of March coming up. But they should be able to beat the Hornets. We'll see how Milwaukee, if they can kind of surprise Milwaukee and win that game, that would be huge. Just like I said, the end goal here clearly is to be the 3 seed. That is the end goal. I can repeat that every podcast until the end of time. That is the goal. But we'll see. Tony and I will be back, like I said, on Tuesday with a weekly show. So look forward to that one. We'll send out mailbag something sometime later this week or next week to do that. That is all for today's Locked On Pacers podcast. As always, you can follow us on Twitter at Locked On Pacers, me at Freedom Adam 5, and Tony at T East NBA. That's all. I hope you guys have a great rest of your day.